Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Your trees we're turning our attention to. They're starting to wake up, and that means it's time to watch out for problems with them. And we'll be talking about dealing with things like pests and diseases and maybe some winter damage, how to keep invasives out of your planting area. Well, that's a lot for a half hour. Paul Segan is with us, DNR Forest Health Specialist in northwest Wisconsin. And I hope you'll join in with your questions as we move along. Paul Segan, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here, Larry. Yes, there is never a shortage of good topics to talk about when we're talking about getting ready for the spring and summer planting season here with trees.
What do you think in the way of pests and diseases to watch out for this year? How does the DNR know when they might be a problem or what might be a problem?
Yeah, it seems like for all the different tree species we have, there's at least one or several pests or diseases that afflict them. And so we keep an eye on pretty much everything, and we receive reports all year round, primarily during the growing season. But what we can do here is we can look over the last, in this case, we'll say about 5 years, and know that we were in a drought cycle over these last 5 years. And that led to a lot of specific types of incidents on trees, mostly insect defoliators. We saw a real surge of defoliators over the last few years as trees became more and more stressed from drought, and as the growing season conditions and lack of moisture and warmer temperatures really favored the population development of some of our common defoliators, things like spruce budworm, spongy moth, oak leaf rollers, some of those things that can really be subject to these population upticks and outbreaks when we have warmer weather and dry weather. But we've kind of seen an easing of that in the last year. We've seen 2025 be somewhat more, a little bit wetter overall, and a little bit of an easing of that drought. And so through watching that weather trend and through looking at the observations, the field notes, and seeing kind of a reduction in those reports of defoliation and some of the pest population surveys that we do, it seems that most of the defoliators are going to be kind of quieter this year in 2026. That being said, it doesn't mean that the trees are off the hook, because it's often said by some of the veteran forest health specialists that as we have wetter years, we tend to see more disease incidents come onto the scene because of the favoring of and the microclimate created that favors the development of often fungal diseases. And so in that sense, we can look forward to with a prediction for somewhat of a wetter April and somewhat of a more neutral precipitation pattern going into early summer, some diseases might come back on the scene that we see somewhat commonly, but we might see an uptick in them. And I've got a couple of names here of some things to watch out for. I think that on our spruce trees, particularly Colorado blue spruce, but also some of the white spruce and black spruce, we might see more rhizosphere needle casts. These are They're a variety of diseases, but rhizosphere is the biggest one of the needle cast diseases in terms of frequency that we see. And this leads to infections in early spring as those new shoots are starting to develop, usually around mid-May through about mid-June. And we get fungal infection on these needles that causes them to slowly turn brown and then cast or fall off the tree, hence the name the needle cast. Some other ones we can expect possibly are, and this is on hardwoods, is anthracnose. Anthracnose is pretty common when we get kind of cooler, rainier types of spring weather, especially with a few frosts thrown in there. If we get late spring frost, we tend to see a fungal disease on hardwoods, maples, oaks, called anthracnose, which can lead to a kind of a melting-like appearance or necrotic dead blotches on the leaves. And oftentimes the leaves, if they're severely infected, they'll fall off and the tree will have to refoliate. And then the other one I have noted here is a potential uptick in armillaria root disease. As we've had the drought stress for the last few years and as we've had spongy moth defoliation, armillaria root disease generally can be a benign type of root disease that's ever so common across the landscape, but it can become more aggressive as trees have accumulated stress over multiple years. And so it can kill them, can be a contributing factor. So I think we might see more armillary root disease kind of continuing its march through the root systems of stressed oaks as a result of that drought and spongy moth.
So a few things to worry about here with Paul Segan. John in Mount Horeb has a different kind of question, I think. Let's go there. John, hi.
Yes, thank you. I have a question about moving white pine trees. We have probably 8 or 10 white pines that are anywhere from 6 to 12 feet tall, and they're in a place that we'd rather not have them, and we have a preferred place. So the question is, could those be successfully moved, you know, at that size this time of the year, or should there be a better time of the year? And we, you know, we'd have a professional mover come in with a big truck with a spade on the back and such. And I don't know if it matters at all, but we have kind of rocky, sandy soil as well. So just curious about moving those white pines.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great question, John, and it can be done. I should ask, what is the diameter approximately on these trees at about the breast height?
Oh, I would say probably 2 to 3 inches.
Okay, yeah, that's good. I think these trees could be successfully moved if the care given to them in the new place they become planted is up to standard. And so I would probably wait until we get into the early part of May. You could do it in latter part of April, but I would let things warm up a little bit with the soil so that where they end up getting planted is a little bit more hospitable and the roots can start to take and develop. But yeah, I would make sure that prior to the transplanting, these trees are well watered, so they're in a good moisture state so that there's some uptake of that soil moisture by the root system. And then when you do eventually transplant them, you're going to want to be very mindful of the care once they get into the new site. That's going to involve, of course, mulching. It's going to involve some fertilization using an organic fertilizer. Larry and I have talked about our favorite. We really like fish emulsion. That is a great one, and it's less likely to burn or cause fertilization stress to the tree. And then also making sure that the site it gets planted in is generally a suitable site. It's not too rocky. Any obstructions that would impede the root development are sort of addressed or removed at the time of planting. But yeah, I've talked to a few people this spring who have done this and they've had success with it. And with those professional tree spades, it can work well if you take care when you do it.
Yeah, all good points. John, good luck with that. Appreciate your call. Stephen in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, I'm actually calling. I live in Manitowoc block on the north side of town. My wife and I bought 32 arborvitaes in our outlet to outline our property. While I was digging a hole, it was about 18, 20 inches of topsoil that got down to clay. We have them all planted, and the problem is we're seeing a lot of brown spots on the end of the arborvitaes. Mm-hmm. What can we do to prevent that from happening, or how can we fix that so we don't have to replace them?
Stephen, when did you plant those?
Late July, about mid-July to middle of August last year.
Okay.
Okay, so these trees, Stephen, are still under some transplant stress. You know, usually we're seeing a window of transplant stress that may last a couple to a few years as these trees are starting to try to regrow the roots that were lost when there was some root pruning to transplant them. But even in the absence of this transplant stress, we could see winter browning or the development of some diseases in these in the foliage of the arborvitae. I think you might be dealing with some winter burn. It's pretty common on conifers. For sure, cedar or arborvitae are very prone to it. And what we end up having is that during the cold winter with really drying and cold winds, we can lose a lot of moisture in the foliage. That's hard to replenish when the roots are kind of stuck in the soil around frozen soil. So they're not getting the replenishment. So what you might be seeing is that effect of browning and dead tissue. What I would recommend is to not go too intense with any pruning until we get into probably the end of May, mid to end of May. Once you start to see the new shoots develop, you're going to want to look and make sure that you prune back eventually anything that died or isn't leafing out, isn't expanding out. But I would give it time because you don't want to add additional stress by pruning out living tissue. The other quick check you could do, you could look at some of the buds. Oftentimes what we see is that even though the foliage can turn brown, even though that might be dead, buds are often hardier. They can withstand colder temperatures than the tender leaf tissue. So you could scratch a couple buds around the trees and look for any kind of green. If you're still seeing green tissue around the buds, that is a sign that it's too early to know if these are going to die or if they're going to make it and leaf out. But I think in the future, if this site is by a road, that's a consideration. Salt spray, we've seen quite a bit of it this year. There are some protective measures with salt spray, which are similar to reducing cold, drying winds that can cause winter burn, putting a little bit of burlap around the young trees that where it's suitable to put it up, and you can kind of stand it up with some wood dowels. That's something you can do. And then also generally avoiding areas really close to the road where you might get more salt drift. Again, something we're seeing more of this particular March and April.
Yeah. And Steve planted those in July. And what are the things that I think is important, well, for any trees of that nature, is to make sure they are watered right up until ground freezes up on newly planted trees. Mm-hmm. I mean, and newly planted to me would be, if you planted them in July, I'd be making sure that there was plenty of water, well watered as it goes into to freezing.
Absolutely. That July period is really high sun and high temperature. And so that's particularly stressful for a tree. So really want to match that and ameliorate that stress with ample watering. And like you said, Larry, generally right until the ground freezes, we want to keep water on those trees. And that actually, going into winter and dormancy with a good water status from watering can prevent a lot of the other things we see on trees, like frost cracks and sun scald that develop later on in the winter when we get really cold snaps.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Stephen, thank you. John in Port Wing, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I called in previously about storm damage on a white pine or a white oak that I planted about 20 years ago. And after we had some thawing, I got a chance to look at it again, and the whole top has been broken out by heavy snow and ice, and it's split at the top. Am I going to be able to recover, to salvage that tree? I just hate to lose it.
How big is the tree?
20 years ago.
Oh, it's 20 years? Oh, okay.
Yeah, John, about how much of that crown has snapped off or has been compromised, if you were to give a percentage of that kind of round peak part of the tree?
Probably 10%, maybe 15, 20%, somewhere between 10 and 20%. And it's split down. How far down would I want to cut it if I'm going to try to salvage it?
Yeah, we have seen quite a few frost cracks develop this winter, so it's a topic on my mind. I think to address it, you're probably going to want to cut all the way down to where the crack ends on the base part of the crown, the lower portion of the crown. But ideally, you're going to want that cut to be very close to where there's some other lateral limb. What you don't want to do is leave a stub behind. When you make that cut, you want it pretty close to where there's another limb that can eventually start to grow and maybe start to sort of grow upward as the sunlight promotes that upward growth. With a case like this, I would say it may be a good idea to consult a certified arborist to get the best outcome, maybe to consult them or even hire them to do the job, as they're going to know where to prune this in probably the most appropriate location. If you decide to go about it on your own, the DNR's Urban Forestry Program has a number. They've got two or three publications that have kind of a diagram of how to prune trees and how to prune trees correctly to avoid issues and incorrect issues like cracks that develop. So those resources on the Wisconsin DNR's Urban Forestry Program website are good places to check if you're going to do this yourself, John.
Probably should be doing it sooner than later, too.
Yes, I think that's a good point. We don't Oh, well, Larry, good point. We have the oak wilt issue. So that we'll throw a plug in for oak wilt. Yes, because we're dealing with an oak here, we really want to wrap up any pruning, wounding, or injury cutting, such as cutting to oaks before April, depending on where you are in the state.
April 15th, I think they say, is the latest or something.
Yeah, April 15th in northern Wisconsin. So we have reached the high-risk period in some parts of Wisconsin, down in about the southern third of Wisconsin at this point, and we're going to be reaching it pretty soon in other parts of the state too. So I would say if you're going to do that work, one thing you could do is apply a pruning sealant to it, John. That's going to protect that surface from introduction of oak wilt. Generally, the white oaks are a little bit more resistant to oak wilt infection, but still, just to be safe, I would probably either wait to do it or do it quick and use some pruning sealer.
Yeah, there you go, John. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, as we talk trees with Paul Segan, DNR Forest Health Specialist, works out of Northwest Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Talking trees with Paul Segan. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in with your tree questions. Michael emailed us. He has some volunteer bur oaks that he'd like to transplant. When's a good time to do that in South Central Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think he can start making his plans right now. I think as we get into about mid-April, latter part of April, it is going to be a good time as the soil starts to warm up in that area to do these transplants. One of the things with transplanting that I often think about, and I've seen some recent work from some of the forestry folks that do a lot of not so much transplanting, but planting, is that care of root systems is really important. And sometimes when we prune off too much of the root system, we can really lead to poor performance in the tree. It's interesting that a lot of people, and I myself, still get into the thought that a larger tree to transplant is better. But the truth is that the smaller the tree is when we transplant it, it often has a better chance of success, usually because we don't have to prune so much of the root system off.
Yeah.
That root system is really vital to the tree's survival and success. And to the extent we can minimize that by sometimes choosing smaller, if you got smaller bur oak to transplant, those maybe are your priority. So you're not having to prune so much of the root system off, so we can get establishment sooner and avoid any kind of turbulent weather events that the tree might otherwise have to sustain.
Susan in Elk Mound emailed us. She has a three 8-year-old black ice plum trees that produced beautifully for several years. They've now contracted some kind of fungal growth on the fruit that is brown and mummifies the plums. Any ways to treat for that?
Oh, that is some kind of fruit disease. I would have to double check. That one I would almost recommend getting a diagnosis from the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Former guest mentioned Brian Huddleston at the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. He does a great job, and he does sample diagnosis. So what Susan could do is take some digital images or collect samples, if she's still got any, perhaps from last year, and send those into the diagnostic lab and get a diagnosis, and then from there determine what types of treatments might be appropriate. That one is a little bit out of my realm, so I'll have to defer to the lab for something like that.
Yeah, UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. If you type that in, you'll get all the information you need. Jerry in Kaukauna, what's on your mind?
I'm calling about root systems too. Can you cut some of the roots on an older established tree that you are just worried about roots pushing into the basement?
Yeah. What kind of tree have you got there, Jerry?
It's a maple tree. I'm not sure of the exact species of it.
Okay. Well, it's a maple, so you got some shallow running roots.
Yeah. Maples love to send their roots out pretty much wherever they can. Jerry, how far away is the foundation from where the tree is growing?
The base to the basement, the base of the tree to the basement is 14 feet.
Okay, 14 feet. And about how wide would you say the crown of that tree is on its width, the crown width?
It's not over the edge of the basement, but, you know.
It's getting close.
It's getting close. Okay, so, you know, some of those roots are going to be pretty important for the health of that tree. Maples are pretty hardy. They can handle some root damage. For sure in construction projects, and they send out a lot of roots that are pretty prolific. My guess is that probably wouldn't compromise the tree's health if you take some other measures to make sure the tree's otherwise healthy. Again, basic principles of mulching during that time after you cut roots, making sure you keep that tree watered within that drip zone around the crown area, especially during periods of dry weather. During the summer, it could be a good idea. But given how hardy maples are and how tough they are and how root prolific they are, I don't think it's going to be an issue. Whether or not you'll achieve your mission is questionable because, you know, those maple roots might just grow right back in the next couple of years. So it's often a battle with those types of trees with their roots.
Well, my dad planted a willow tree next to our home, and when we went to sell the home this last year, the first thing we had to do was fix the basement wall that was bulging in because the roots. And it was about the same distance, Jerry.
Trees have quite the will to live and to survive.
Yeah, it was a little expensive process fixing that for sure. Patty in Windsor, your turn. Hi, Patty.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling about arborvitaes again. I put in like 20 arborvitaes about the same time in July. I watered them really well. I deep watered them before winter. And that, like maybe half of them are very rusty orange, and I'm worried they're not going to make it. I'm just wondering how many years should I cover them with burlap to protect them? I have a really harsh north wind that comes in.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Are they near a road at all, Patty, where they could have been subject to salt drift?
No, they're not near a road at all. They're in my backyard.
And they're turning orange.
Yep, they're rusty.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I have to believe it was probably it was subject to those heavy doses of cold, dry wind, and probably and winter burn is probably what you're faced with. Again, as far as remedies, I'd wait and see what ends up growing here as they start to leaf out, and then prune back anything dead to where you start to see live tissue. As far as the burlap goes, I think as long as you can put burlap around it, I'd say around up to 4 or 5 feet. Would be a good idea to make sure by that point the tree's well established. Now, this burlap, you really don't want to keep it on during the growing season. You want to take it off, of course, so that tree can maximize its photosynthesis and we don't get the stagnation of moist air, which can lead to development of some of the fungal diseases. But I would say up to 5 feet or probably at least a few years once they've become established to make sure they're just not getting inflicted with additional stress during the winter.
All right. There you go, Patty. Thanks for calling. Brent in Wausau. Hi, Brent.
Hi. I've got some eastern hemlocks that are growing into other trees and growing over the roof line and was just wondering if there's a best time of year and a best process for pruning those back.
Oh, yeah. Hemlock. One of my favorite, Brent. I've got some hemlocks in my yard, and I'm thinking a little bit about the same. They're not big enough to need to be pruned yet, though, for structure. But generally, hemlock and a lot of our other trees are best pruned outside of the growing season. During the dormant period is a good time. That way, the tree is not as prone to producing odors that might attract an insect or disease. It's a little less stressful to the physiology to prune during the winter. And before leaf, before additional growth occurs here in the spring is still a good time. So you could still get some of that pruning done now. With the hemlock, I think, you could defer to a certified arborist in terms of how to prune them. If they're large, of course, no ladders, no kind of sketchy access to the branches to prune them unless you're on the ground and using a long extension pole saw. But also, I'd recommend looking at that pruning guide from the Urban Forestry Program at DNR to see some of the diagrams on how to cut, where to cut, those types of trees, because hemlocks are pretty tough. They can handle a decent amount of pruning, but we never want to prune more than about a third of the living tissue in any given year due to the stress that that can cause on the tree. So I would say maybe. A couple of years to minimize the 1 year impact that could otherwise occur on the tree.
Oh, you broke up there, and we just missed your last couple of your last statements there, Paul.
Oh,
but I think we're done. Actually, we're out of time, Paul. It's been a pleasure, and I'll be seeing you again before I retire. I'm pretty sure of that. Thank you.
I think so.
Thanks so much for being with us, Paul Segan, DNR Forest Health Specialist. Always great to have him stop by, and we'll have him for a longer time the next time he's on. I'm pretty sure. I know that to be the case. Great to have him with us. And thank you so much for listening. And big thanks to our team. We got Clara Neipert. We got Joel Patnaud, Lee Rayburn, Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. And, of course, I'm Larry Mueller. I really appreciate you listening in. And please stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.